You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show, Kate Archer-Kent and her guests dig into the new state budget plan unveiled later today by Governor Evers. Find out more and share your reactions tomorrow at 7 on The Morning Show. Now, President Trump's former personal attorney Michael Cohen is testifying behind closed doors today before the House Intelligence Committee. That follows yesterday's public hearing in front of the House Oversight Committee. There, he called the president a racist, a con man, and a cheat. He said Trump manipulated financial records, paid off women to silence affairs, and knew in advance that WikiLeaks would release emails damaging to Hillary Clinton during the 2016 presidential campaign. The president weighed in this morning from Vietnam, calling yesterday's proceedings a fake hearing.
He lied a lot, but it was very interesting because he didn't lie about one thing. He said no collusion with the Russian hoax. And I said, I wonder why he didn't just lie about that, too, like he did about everything else. I mean, he lied about so many different things. And I was actually impressed that he didn't say, well, I think there was collusion for this reason or that. He didn't say that. He said no collusion.
So what now? Mark Osler is the Robert and Marion Short Professor of Law at the University of St. Thomas in Minneapolis. Mark, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks. Thanks for having me back.
Well, a lot came out of that hearing yesterday. What was your main takeaway? What stuck out to you the most?
Well, the emotion of it was a big part of it. And, you know, unfortunately, I think some of the more important parts were obscured by the grandstanding on both sides. That, you know, I've testified in front of a congressional panel, and a lot of times you're just hearing them say what they think as opposed to hearing what the witnesses think. But in terms of what we did hear, a lot of it was confirming things that we already knew, you know, that we'd at least caught a glimpse of. For example, the Trump Tower Moscow, the fact that there were negotiations on that going on well into 2016. Cohen had already pled guilty to that, in fact, to lying about that to the Senate. So that really wasn't new information. There were some bits of new information that we saw, the story about Roger Stone telling the president about the coming WikiLeaks dump of information was new, I think, to a lot of people. And, you know, some of the more salacious things, the allegation of racism, certainly. Now, those things, like the discussion of racist comments, aren't going to go directly into what we're going to see come out in the larger picture when we see the Mueller report and the work done by the investigators in the Southern District of New York.
Now, nobody, I think, will ever face prosecution based solely on the words of Michael Cohen. What stuck out to you as things that could be corroborated by documents maybe subpoenaed by Robert Mueller or by a House committee?
Yeah, I suspect that you're talking about two different things there, that Robert Mueller has probably already subpoenaed or received the things that corroborate what he cares about. They're coming to the end game in theirs. Now, what the House committee might look at next probably will relate to financial records and things like that. In terms of corroborating what he talked about, there were some incidents like the straw purchase of a painting of Donald Trump that was purchased by the charity that he ran. You know, that's probably illegal in the use of the charitable funds. There's already been a fair amount of corroboration of that, of other people talking about it that have confirmed some of the details that Cohen provided. When we look at the Trump Tower, the discussions of the Trump Tower of Moscow, which was supposed to be Europe's tallest building if they built it, it was quite a project that was being proposed. I suspect that those discussions are being corroborated or have been corroborated by the Mueller investigators. The Southern District of New York, what they're looking at more is financial transactions that are going to back up some of the claims that are made, particularly dealing with the payoff to Stormy Daniels. That, you know, he had the check, he showed the check, it had Donald Trump's distinctive signature on there, and certainly that showed that he was being paid for something. But there's certainly more thorough financial records than that, and those are going to end up in the hands of the investigators.
Oh, in that clip we heard from President Trump, he focused on something that Michael Cohen didn't talk about as much, so-called collusion with Russia by the president and his people. Did you see Michael Cohen avoiding that topic or not really touching that? Is that good news for the president?
Well, I probably in the sense that Michael Cohen didn't have that testimony, it's good news for the president. But there's a way in which it's bad news for the president, too, almost as he seemed to reflect in his public statement, the president. It adds to Cohen's credibility a little bit, that he was conceding things that he didn't know. Another point that was like that was when he said he had no reason to think that the tape of Donald Trump's escapades in Russia that was part of the Steele dossier exists. And that was a concession that if Cohen's goal was simply to slander Trump in any way possible, he probably, and he was a liar, he would have lied and said that that tape was real and that he, you know, seen evidence of it.
Talking to Mark Osler, professor of law at the University of St. Thomas in Minneapolis, looking at yesterday's testimony by Michael Cohen before the House Oversight Committee and the reaction since then. Mark, it's been commented on a lot at this point. The key goal of Republicans on that committee seemed to be to discredit the credibility of Michael Cohen. Do you think that they successfully did that?
No, not really. I mean, not any more than he was already discredited. I mean, you had a witness there who'd already been convicted of lying to Congress and had pled guilty to lying to Congress. There's really no better impeachment than that. And what they tried to pile on, I'm not sure added very much. From his perspective, Cohen did a pretty good job of trying to explain why that was then and this is now. In the sense that he decided to fly straight and tell the truth. You know, that may not have been completely true, of course. One of the things that he said is that he never wanted to work in the White House, and today there's significant voices coming out to the contrary on that claim, at least.
And there's talk from some leading House Republicans who were there, Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan, I believe, referring those particular statements to the Department of Justice to see if, in fact, Michael Cohen had lied to Congress again, which presumably would affect his plea deal and his ultimate sentence.
Yeah, it would be a tough thing to prosecute because what someone wants is an affirm thing. It's not like saying that this action happened on this date and that's not true. Saying that I wanted this or I didn't want that. You know, a lot of times we want something and we don't tell anyone, or we don't want something, but we indicate to people advertently or inadvertently that we do. So I think that would be a tougher charge than some of the ones that have already been brought and proven by plea against Cohen.
We've talked about a lot of the legal outcomes of this so far, and we'll look at those some more. Politically, did yesterday matter? Is this something that you think voters anywhere across the spectrum are looking at and being swayed by?
Perhaps. I mean, one thing that it was hard not to watch that hearing and think, this is the person that Donald Trump trusted the most. In the way that might have been worked against what the Republicans were doing, because every time they went on about what a terrible person Cohen was, it certainly was at the back of my mind, but this is the terrible person that the Trump organization and the president himself trusted with some of his most sensitive tasks.
Do you expect to see follow-up hearings now toward the end? Michael Cohen was asked and gave the names of other people who could provide more information about a lot of the topics that came up, and are providing 3, 4, 5 different names. Do you expect to see more hearings with some of the people whose names came up then?
Yeah, I think we very well could, given that Democrats control the House and have the power to have these hearings. I think that we will see hearings in the future. Now, one of the things that's fascinating to me is that you've got 2 days of closed hearings and the 1 day of open hearings. And it could be that some of the reason that we have closed hearings is because what Cohen is talking about relates to ongoing investigations. And once those investigations are concluded, probably the SDNY, the Southern District of New York investigation, and the Mueller investigation, then they could even go back to Cohen and bring him back again and have open hearings on some of the things that are closed for now.
We're talking about the fallout from the Michael Cohen testimony yesterday with Mark Osler. He's a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you make of what Michael Cohen had to say? Is he exposing important details about who President Trump is and what he's done? Or do you agree with House Republicans that he is in no way a credible witness, that he has lied to Congress in the past and he can't be trusted now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about the congressional testimony of Michael Cohen, President Trump's former personal lawyer, and where things go from here. Mark Osler is our guest, professor of law at the University of St. Thomas in Minneapolis. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What stood out to you the most about what Cohen had to say? Do you think his testimony is trouble for President Trump, or is he just not a credible witness? Do you agree with House Republicans that this was a waste of time, or with House Democrats that we're getting important information here from a key confidant, former confidant of the president? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. You can also tweet us at Central Time WPR. Mark, there's been some talk at the CPAC, this conservative political action group meeting, from Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows, saying that, hey, this is the Democrats. This hearing was the Democrats trying to lay their first foundations toward impeachment. Do you see that?
Well, I don't think in a direct way. If there is a movement towards impeachment, that's going to build off the Mueller report. That once we see that report, it's highly unlikely that Robert Mueller is going to seek an indictment against the president, just because he's a company man, and that's not the policy of the Department of Justice. It is possible, I'm not saying it's likely, but it's certainly possible, that the report may lay out the foundation for impeachment. And I think that's what the Democrats are going to be looking to closely, because it's a risky thing. They don't want to go into that process without a firm foundation, and the Mueller report might supply that, especially given that, remember, the charges are brought by the House, but the trial itself is in the Senate, and the Senate is still controlled by the Republicans. So it's unlikely, unless things change a lot, that we would see a conviction come out of that trial.
Let's go to our callers now. Glenn is with us in Brookfield. Glenn, hello.
Hi.
What do you want to bring up, Glenn?
Just my comment is that I think that if we say that anybody has criminal activity can't be a credible witness, that would certainly stagnate the courts, because they use that prolifically, especially in putting felons away and mafiosos. They've used witnesses who've had checkered past and deemed them as credible witnesses when they came forward in a court. And I think Cohen's testimony can't be just thrown away by saying, well, you lied in the past, therefore everything you say can't be taken as a credible evidence.
Glenn, thanks for the call. Mark, Glenn saying, hey, courts are full of witnesses with maybe shady backgrounds, but they still bring important information.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I was a federal prosecutor myself for 5 years and used the testimony of people who had been convicted of felonies. There is a difference, though. If the prior felony is for selling narcotics, that's different than a prior conviction for perjury, where it's specifically about lying under oath. And I think there is a point of differentiation there that's pretty important that we have with Cohen, as opposed to those cases where we have people who have been convicted of street crimes or things that don't necessarily involve lying in that direct way.
Glenn, thanks for the call. Nancy joins us next in Minocqua. Nancy, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, I wanted to say that I thought NPR did a fantastic job with the coverage yesterday, and that I thought Michael Cohen did a great job. I thought they got a lot of information, that the Democrats asked him a lot of good questions. And I was pretty much disappointed in the Republicans, because they really didn't ask him any questions. They just talked a lot about newspaper articles that had been written about Cohen and things that he had done wrong.
Nancy, thanks for the call. Mark, can you talk about the Republican strategy? We mentioned attacking the credibility of Michael Cohen, raising the thought that he might be angling for book or movie rights. Some even Republicans have pointed out one thing they didn't do a lot of was defending President Trump from the charges that Michael Cohen was raising through this hearing.
That was surprising. I expected at least somebody on the Republican side to speak affirmatively about Donald Trump and what he had done or hadn't done. And we did not see that. In terms of the Republican tactics, I think it did backfire to some degree, at least in the eyes of a lot of people who aren't Democrats that I've talked to, that the easy target was there, but they may have been a little heavy-handed in the way they approached it. And they probably didn't shake his credibility the way that they had hoped to.
Right. And Michael Cohen thought of as a very controversial, confrontational figure over the years. There's audio of him swearing, for example, at a current NPR reporter in a private phone call. And yet here they said, "You're terrible." And yeah, I'm terrible. I'm paraphrasing right there, but that kept happening again and again.
Yeah, and once again, that they're saying you're terrible, he's saying I'm terrible, and a lot of us are sitting there watching that thinking this is the kind of person the president surrounds himself with, and that's not, in the end, the outcome they probably wanted.
Let's bring on another caller now. Ron joins us in Madison. Ron, hi.
Hi.
What do you think, Ron?
Well, I'm a lifelong Republican for more than 55 years, grew up in Idaho, which is strongly Republican. I'm a... not a Trumpian. And although Cohen's testimony may be weak because of his credibility may be weak because of his past lying, but what he says, for the most part, seems to correspond with what I've observed in the last 30 years. And I find that Trump behaves like a middle school bully. And he's fluent in newspeak.
Ron, thanks a lot for the call. Not quite making out everything you're saying because of the line, but Mark, in general, Ron's saying he's a Republican, doesn't necessarily trust Michael Cohen, but what Michael Cohen said lines up with what he's seen from Donald Trump over the years.
Yeah, and I think that was the response of a lot of people across the spectrum, that, for example, when Michael Cohen testified that he probably had made over 500 calls to people basically to rough them up a little, to scare them if they'd said negative things about the president, that was consistent with what we knew about him and what we'd seen from other aspects of the administration. It's interesting. One of my childhood friends is a former AP reporter named Ron Fournier, and he's one of the people that Cohen called during that time. It was a pretty common experience, apparently, for people in the press. That kind of behavior... It is credible in a sense because there's a consistency with other behaviors that we've seen by those who are close to the president.
Thanks, Ron, for the call. We are talking to Mark Osler from the University of St. Thomas about Michael Cohen's testimony before a House committee yesterday. Back to your calls now. Gloria is with us in Platteville. Gloria, hello.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I think you're doing a great job here. There's one thing that hasn't been mentioned that Mr. Cohen mentioned was that Mr. Trump is a racist, and not only being a con artist and supposedly lying every three and a half minutes and doing all these crazy things with the Trump and with Russia, then we've got somebody that's a racist on top of it all. So, I believe Mr. Cohen.
I'm going to jump in because, again, your line isn't great, but she is getting back to that Michael Cohen mentioning a couple of racist statements that he said the president made, something that probably can't be corroborated, in documents. Can you talk about the impact of that, though, Mark?
Yeah, I think it did have an impact, in part because it wasn't a vague allegation of racism. It was in a kind of earthy story that they're driving through Chicago, and Donald Trump looks out the window and says that only black people could live this way. And it's consistent with some of the other things that he said, that when he made an appeal for black votes, saying, what have you got to lose, implying that black people in this country are uniformly at the bottom of society, that what he said was had that air of reality to it because of the context and because of the larger context from what we've seen from this president in the past.
Thanks for your call, Gloria. Mark, in our last minute or so, there are a lot of moving parts here. What are you watching for next?
I'm watching for the release of the Mueller report. It is going to patch up a lot of these things. Now, of course, we may not see it right away. It is going to go to the Department of Justice, and then they face the decision of whether or not to forward it to Congress. And if they do not forward it to Congress, will Congress make other efforts to get that report? But I do believe that we are sooner rather than later going to see that report. And once we do, these different parts of the story that we've seen in isolation, an indictment here, Cohen's testimony there, a release of information over there, suddenly we're going to be looking at the whole picture and things are going to be much, much clearer.
Briefly, though, even if that report dropped tomorrow, there's still the Southern District of New York investigations that we don't necessarily know what they're investigating, right?
That's true. And I think that when we end up seeing the indictments of people in the Trump circle, many of them will be out of that investigation from the Southern District of New York.
We'll leave it there for now. Mark, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Mark Osler is a professor of law at the University of St. Thomas. We talked to them about the fallout from Michael Cohen's congressional testimony and what it means for President Trump's political and legal future. Yesterday's session before the House Oversight Committee was the only public hearing for Cohen. He testified behind closed doors on Tuesday for the Senate Intelligence Committee, today before the House Intelligence Committee.